Hi, everybody. Welcome to Coach's Corner. I have Dr. Leah Saunders with me today, and I have started following her work a while ago and just really love the holistic approach she takes to health and particularly sleep. She's known for teaching people, especially women, how to sleep like a queen, turning her postpartum sleep deprivation into an opportunity to serve millions of women who suffer in sleeplessness. Dr. Leah Saunders is a naturopathic doctor turned sleep guru. She is an innovative healer and engaging speaker, passionately educating women as well as clinicians on the intersection of sleep and hormone health. With sleep scores that make us all jealous, including me, Leah's ultimate mission is to help women chase their dreams, not exhaustion. So her approach to solving sleep struggles intertwines hormone health, nervous system regulation, and what she calls a soul-focused approach to focus on the deeper reason why so many of us can't fall asleep or wake up at night. She has a special coupon for her program. She has a self-paced program and also the opportunity to work with her one-on-one. And she has discounted those exclusively for my listeners. If you go to thesleepfix.com/Christine, you can learn about those programs. We talk about it more in the interview as well. All right. And now on to my interview with Dr. Leah Saunders. Dr. Leah, welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Christine. I'm honored to be here.
Well, and we're going to talk about many things today. But one of the things we're going to talk about is my favorite/least favorite subject. I never was obsessed with sleep until I had a kid. But ever since I've had a kid, I'm obsessed with her sleep, my sleep. Sleep has been a huge thing in my home. And for someone where sleep just wasn't ever really an issue, it's been a big change. So I'd love to start with a little bit of your story because you're an ND, you're a naturopathic doctor, and maybe you can define for people what that really is. And you've really zoned in on sleep. I mean, there's so many areas that you could focus on. And I imagine as a doctor, like you see how much sleep contributes to all other health aspects of our life. But I'd love to know a little bit more about why you chose to like double down on sleep.
Mm-hmm. I so resonate with your story, Christine, because mine, and I think many women is similar, and even in parents, it's similar. And so I was always a good sleeper. I love sleep. I was given a whole like Christmas themed present package one year about like getting excited and being excited for bed because that was just like who I was. It was a whole thing. And fast forward through my first pregnancy, many people said to me, you know, oh, get your sleep now or enjoy that while you can. And you know, once you're a mom, and there's such a narrative around how much we lose, how much we have to self-sacrifice as women and as moms. And so I really didn't want to buy into that. When I was about 3 to 4 months postpartum, I was really struggling because my son hit that infamous 3 to 4 month sleep regression and his sleep was really broken. And so then my sleep, as I know you understand, was really broken as well. And then I was also back to work at that point in my postpartum experience. So I was starting to see patients again. I was managing my clinic. I was also trying to adjust in this new role I had as a mother, trying to maintain and wanting to nourish my relationship with my husband. And of course, myself and take care of myself. And at one point, I couldn't remember the last time that I had slept for more than 90 minutes because my sleep was so broken. And I just felt like a disaster. So I went into work one morning and I can still picture it. Like I was just so tired and I was so frustrated with being tired, you know, how our experience mm-hmm. can get layered. And I really felt like I was failing because I was thinking like, how can I take care of other people if I am not really taking care of myself and feeling my best? And one of my colleagues looked at me that day or at some point in that journey and said, you know, how are you doing? Are you okay? And the reflex response that I wanted to say was like, yeah, I'm fine. Or like, I'm good. How are you? Because that's what we do, right? We just like dismiss it and move on and just color code everything. And I had this moment of transparency, or maybe like complete lack of tolerance for anything but the truth. And I just said to her, you know what? I'm not okay. Actually, I don't feel okay. And I remember saying, like, I don't know how to take care of others. I feel like it's not normal to be this tired. I feel like this shouldn't be a thing. How many women are struggling in sleeplessness? And like, I really started to appreciate it. And her response back to me was really well-intentioned. And it was, well, other women do it.
Mm.
And I know that she meant like other women do it. So you can do it too. You can figure it out. Like, we got this. We can, you can do it. You can navigate this. And it didn't hit me then as much as it has since I've reflected on it. And that actually was like a pivotal moment for me in my practice and my career and really my life in thinking, okay, we have this narrative that as women, we have to figure it out. We have to suck it up. Mm-hmm. We just have to deal with it in so many ways. But as our conversation relates to sleeplessness, as we become moms or as we navigate our careers or as we want to do all the things. And it really made me realize and appreciate how many women were then suffering and how many women normalized their sleep struggles or sleep loss. And in my practice, I started digging into this a little bit because I started to realize the patients who are getting better and who are really vital and doing really well were also good sleepers. And the patients who had chronic complex issues, who were, you know, not responding maybe to treatment plans as we would expect, then they were also often struggling with sleep. And then when my sleep was broken, as you said, like you have a new appreciation for the impact that that has on you and anyone else physically, emotionally, and even I think spiritually. Mm. And I remember asking my own naturopathic doctor, like, how can I feel like myself again? Like, what can I do? And she was like, how's your sleep? And I was like, it's still broken, because then eventually my son started sleeping fine. And my sleep then, and many people have this experience of like, you wake up at the same time every night and you're like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's 3:17 AM. Hi. Mm-hmm. And so then we become, our nervous system becomes so ingrained in these patterns, especially after traumatic events or big life changes. You know, we have these patterns that develop and then continue, even though perhaps the stressor itself has lessened or even resolved. So even once my son was sleeping, I was still having an issue. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can to get my sleep back on track. And even as a naturopathic doctor, so if you're not familiar, we're medical care providers here in Canada who can provide what a family doctor would provide in many ways, but we look at the body in a much more comprehensive way and integrative way. So I'm interested in understanding what my patients are eating, of course, how they're sleeping, how much they're moving their body, what stress they have. So we can work with our patients more. Many people may be familiar with like the functional medicine model. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to naturopathic medicine model, if not the same in many ways. And so even with all of my training as a naturopathic doctor and a bajillion years of school and practice, I still didn't really know what to do, actually. And I was like, huh. And when my patients up until that point would come in and say like, well, I only sleep a couple hours or my sleep's really broken. I've always been a bad sleeper. And they just brushed it off. I'd be like, okay, and moving on, because it like they had normalized it. And I didn't really feel like I had that much to offer, truthfully, until it was my problem to solve for myself. And then I did. And I dug into the research and I started listening to all the podcasts and I started uncovering all of this incredible information as it relates to sleep and how it intersects every single aspect of our health. There's not one component or body system that sleep doesn't impact and vice versa. And then I was like, how come no one is talking about this? This is so critical and crucial. Like if we're not sleeping, we're not healing. And of course, we're not going to feel our best and live as long and create the life that we want to be living if we're too tired. And what if by treating sleep, we saw improvements in all of these other areas, especially the complex chronic disease that we're facing, especially with mental health? And no one else was talking about it and focusing on it. And then when I started to look into the relationship between sleep and hormone health, I was even more fascinated because there's such a strong connection for women in particular, especially as we transition through different hormone changes like PMS, perimenopause, and menopause.
Right.
And so that's been my journey into the world of sleep and helping women sleep better so that they can do what they love and what sets their soul on fire during the day.
What were the things that you did specifically that really helped you?
A lot of it started with nervous system regulation for sure. And so, and that term I know gets thrown around a lot, but really creating more space in your day is so important. Our mind and brain and nervous system needs blank space. And there's a very real bottleneck effect. So the number one reason I hear women complain of sleep issues, they'll typically say like, well, my mind is so busy. I just can't turn off my mind. They might fall asleep fine. But then if they wake up in the night, then typically their mind starts running or feels as though it's already running and racing when you're waking up. And there's a bottleneck effect that happens if our days are overwhelmed, overscheduled, if we're under-supported, if we don't have the ability to have that blank space and a little bit of flow. And it doesn't have to mean that you have to spend a long time in meditation. This can be going on a walk or, you know, while you're driving or commuting, like not putting more information in. Like we're just so overloaded and stimulated with information and sensory input. Often what we need is just time to be with our thoughts and feelings in order for us to understand them, acknowledge them, bring them into our awareness, alchemize them, create space for them. And then we can get in touch with those deeper parts of ourselves that are asking for something, right? There's always a desire beneath any kind of discontent. And if we're focused or fixating or ruminating on difficult situations in our life or stressful situations or just all the things we have to do, then there's no space to check in with who you are and how you're actually feeling.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the nervous system regulation techniques that really worked for you? And what do you see work for the people that you work with?
Yeah. So honestly, nothing complicated, really carving out time for mindfulness. And if meditation works for you, then I think that's wonderful. It's an option. Really anything that gets you back into your body. So for me, it was practicing a morning routine that allowed me to get up and be intentional and create space and include mindfulness in that and meditation. And also light exposure. We don't necessarily think about that maybe as much as we should, but it's the number one, it's the biggest impact that we can have on our whole circadian rhythm and sleep-wake cycle. And so making sure that we're connecting with those regular light and dark patterns in a day has such a massive impact on our cortisol levels and when cortisol and how much cortisol is released. Mm. And also really working to balance blood sugar. And again, we might not think of that as a nervous system regulation technique, but if your blood sugar is imbalanced, you're eating irregularly, depending on how well you manage, if you do intermittent fasting. Again, if you're that like go, go, go person who skips meals and our blood sugar is imbalanced, that's going to put extra strain on cortisol being released from your adrenal glands. And that is just one more drop in the bucket that you probably don't need. And we forget that we're fasting overnight. And so if your blood sugar dips to a certain threshold for everybody, it's going to be different. But if it dips at night, then cortisol can be released because one of cortisol's compensatory mechanisms is to bring our blood sugar back up so that we have that fuel to run from that, perceived lion, tiger, or bear. I don't think there's any in our bedrooms these days. And then at the same time, when cortisol is released in order for blood sugar to come back up, one of cortisol's other job is to encourage our brain to scan our environment for a potential threat. And because there's no lion, tiger, or bear sitting in your bedroom, then that's when we typically move more into that rumination, replaying the day's events, conversations, worry, anxiety type of picture. So even really building into, so when I think about what I did when you asked me that question, a lot of it was aligning my daily schedule to what worked for me for my body clock, creating more of that blank space, making sure I was supporting and nourishing my body, and making sure I was really engaging. And this is like a new area, new level of exploration I'm doing right now, even in my life, of like really engaging in what brings you joy and allows you to get into that flow state. So that we're moving out of sympathetic overdrive, where cortisol and adrenaline are so dominating in most of the time that we're spending our days, and really able to move more into that rest and digest state. Yeah.
You know, and then you have someone like me who's doing all of those things, but still has a baby that's waking up that you need to tend to. And so your body just gets in this habit. Because I think, you know, one of the things that has frustrated me as a new mom is that people with babies who sleep well don't understand why you're not sleeping. And some children sleep better than others. It's just true. Just like some people sleep better than others, some people need more sleep, some people need less sleep. So often there's a reality of just like not getting enough sleep because you're tending to your child. So for the new moms out there that are like in that phase, you know, I know the one thing that was super helpful for me is like on, you know, when Athena, and not all moms have this choice, like when Athena was a lot younger and I was up nursing her, you know, every 2.5 to 4 hours, depending on her age. I just had to build a little more time into my day to just rest and not like put that much pressure on myself. But for people that are in a place where, like new moms, as an example, and you know, a lot of kids don't start sleeping really well through the night, anywhere from, if you get lucky, it can be 6 to 8 months. I've had other mom friends, their kid was 2, 2.5. You know, my daughter's 2 and she just recently really started sleeping well, like when we don't hear from her throughout the night. So it's like my nervous system is just finally like not bracing for, you know, hearing from her at night. So for people that are in that, what are some things we can do to just like kind of accept, all right, this is a season, but what are some of the things we can do to, because I know you can't make up for great sleep, but at least do our best to put some things into the restorative bucket when the reality is like we're up tending to a child.
I love that. Yeah. And I resonate with that too, because both of my little guys didn't consistently, reliably start sleeping through the night until about 2 as well. So one, like absolutely so much self-kindness and compassion into this phase of life, because your energy is so in demand from others, right? And from your little ones. So recognizing, and for me, this was a big growth opportunity in, with my first, of like your self-worth and self-value is not based on how productive or what you got done in a day. And I found that to be a huge adjustment and healing opportunity for me, in terms of like, sometimes you just wash the same dish and sometimes the dishes don't even get done. And you're like, I don't even know how it was possible to be home all day. And all of this stuff, like there's still a mess and all of the things are still waiting for me. So I think a lot of kindness and compassion for realizing like you're doing the best with the resources you have. I always believe that. And then asking with that kindness and compassion, where it might be really easy to say like, oh, I should be doing that, right? Like I should be working on that, or I should be tending to that. If your body is asking for rest, find how you can do that in a way that is comforting and nourishing to you. And so it might mean that during a nap time, you do your best to sit for a little bit, maybe not the whole time if you don't have that available. Where I see a lot of people missing out on an opportunity that is available to them, although it can be challenging, is to just go to bed earlier at night. Mm-hmm. And that can be an adjustment too, because I know we have like ideas around like, oh, I can't go to bed at 6:30 or 7 or 8. Like that's so early. But again, if your body is asking and you're short slept and are not getting a chance to have a break in the day, maybe your child doesn't sleep or there's other things that you really do need to do, then that evening time, you know, is so precious. And it's like, oh, but it's like the only time I get to me. And it's the time that you want to disconnect or decompress by like scrolling or watching another episode or whatnot. And so I would really encourage you to think about what you could do in that time that might actually be a little bit more fulfilling, that might fill your energy back up. Because we do feel different when we, you know, stretch for 10 minutes, have some yoga, do some yoga, have a hot bath or a hot tub or a cup of herbal tea and just like chat with our partner versus being on a device and again, having more input. So that would be my recommendation, is to like really ask yourself if there's an opportunity to get to bed any earlier, even if it might seem socially unacceptable to go to bed that early. It's not forever. And that's something that really, really helped me, is just like leaning into when my body wanted to go to bed earlier in the evening to try to catch up on that sleep, because we get most of our deep sleep in the first half of the night. So when we push our bedtime and when we're not going to bed until later, then we're going to miss out on the deep restorative benefit of sleep. And that is just that there's no nervous system regulation technique that compares to what deep sleep can do.
Yeah. Side note, I was looking at your Instagram and saw, because I have an Oura ring as well, that you got a sleep score. It was of 93, but what really impressed me is you got over 3 hours of deep sleep. I was like, oh my God, how does she do that? The thing about deep sleep is you could get like, you know, cause everybody looks at time of sleep, yep. But if I get, you know, 7 hours of sleep, but I got an hour and 50 minutes of deep sleep and like an hour and 45 of REM sleep versus if I got like, I don't know, 8 hours, which I never do, and got like under an hour of deep sleep, I'm going to feel like crap the next day, even if I got more sleep. So can we talk, like, I love that you said going to bed early. I do that. So I don't switch my daughter for daylight savings. It's my own way to boycott it, because I think daylight savings is ridiculous. So she goes to bed later now, because I like to keep her on her circadian rhythm. So it doesn't get dark here till like 9. It doesn't get light here until around 7. So she goes to bed between 8 and 8:30 and wakes up, you know, around 7:30. And I put her down for bed. I go and have a little snack, because blood sugar's a thing for me. And then I go to bed. Like, my goal is to be asleep at 9:30, like every night. And if I'm not, it really like starts dipping into my deep sleep. And so I can't emphasize enough for people, like, I get that too. Like, your nighttime is like your time. And I've just shifted to have like a new relationship to the morning. So I wake up between 5 and 6. I go for a walk. I watch the sun come up. My daughter's still sleeping, and it makes a huge difference. I use that time to connect with my husband. So I think what I hear you saying is, if we're going to prioritize sleep, we do need to make some changes. And those, we might have a part of us that resists those changes, but when we start sleeping better, those changes seem so worth it. So thank you for bringing up the going to bed. I want to just dive into my side note here of the 3 hours of deep sleep. How do you do that? How do you get 3 hours of deep sleep? I've never been jealous of sleep scores, but until now, like, I'm like, oh my God, 3 hours of deep sleep. It's amazing.
I think it's my gift. I don't know. I wish I had a secret, like a secret sauce recipe to tell you. Honestly, I think it's just been the culmination of so many things. And let's assume in this conversation too, that something like the Oura ring or a sleep tracker is accurate, because there's always some degree of inaccuracy, sure. But consistently my deep sleep scores are that high. And I think really, like, I am tapped into my circadian rhythm. It's important for everybody to understand what theirs is and know that you can shift it if you desire. Like if you are a night owl and you want to be able to get up earlier, you can do that over time. Like we see, and it doesn't take a long time, but there's studies on using, you know, specific light therapy exposure, meal timing, caffeine timing, exercise timing to shift your circadian rhythm. And of course, we know that's possible too with travel and jet lag and things like that. So one is really being in touch with that. And I'm similar to you in terms of like early to bed, early to rise. And then my day is also like, I really believe that that deep sleep comes after I've lived in alignment in my day. And so that for me really means having that time like you in the morning. That time for me and what I'll explain to people who I work with is there's something so different about your alone time, your me time in the morning after you have slept well. It's like a recharging, expansive energy that you have, if you feel that, Christine, mm-hmm. versus at the end of the day when you have that alone time, it's like you just want to decompress. Like you're not, you know, it's a yeah. flatter energy. So for me, if you look at it time, even if you have like a half an hour to yourself in the morning before your day starts, it's probably worth the same that you might feel like an hour and a half or something, I don't know, in the evening. So to get deep sleep, like it's just what I talked about in terms of I'm in touch with my circadian rhythm. I move my body. I am engaged in work that I love. And I have the most loving and supportive husband. My kids are amazing. Of course, they drive me crazy at times, but we're healthy. And I put a lot of energy and effort into maintaining my health and wellness. And in the evenings, of course, we're like busy with kid activities and things like that. But I don't have a lot of input. And I know that might seem so simple, but recently I was together with two girlfriends for a girls weekend. And one of them in particular is like, also, she's like, how do you get so much deep sleep? I can't get deep sleep. I never wake up for the rest. I'm feeling so tired. And she's like, my brain is just like so busy. And she is an avid reader. Like we've discovered to her words, she's like, I was reading for sport. Like she just like burned through books. And so we like to give each other these growth challenges after girls' weekends. And for her, it was like, what if you stop reading? Like maybe the reading is a distraction from actually needing to be in your mind and be in your body a little bit. And so that was only 3 weeks ago. And she messaged our little group chat this week and was like, you will not believe how much better I'm sleeping because I've just like given myself more blank space in the day. Instead of reading, I sit with myself and my thoughts for 10 minutes twice a day. And I incorporate more of a bedtime routine that like gets me in touch with my body instead of having me stay up in my mind. Mm. And so those little shifts, like people always ask me or want, you know, like what's a magic supplement or even prescription or combination of routines or nervous system regulation techniques or breath work or whatever. All of those things can help. And really you just have to find what works for you based on what is happening in your life, what you can incorporate. And it doesn't always have to be the same. I think that's really important too, because sometimes with sleep at the beginning, when you're like, I've never been so obsessed with sleep and my daughter's sleep and my own, we can sometimes become so rigid around our sleep routines. And a lot of people can start to experience anticipatory anxiety about sleep. So then they're having anxiety about the thought of like going to bed and if they're going to sleep and how well they're going to sleep. And so if we can bring more, like more of a really of a feminine approach to it, more flow, more getting in touch with ourselves and saying, okay, what is it that my body needs today? What is it that my body needs tonight? And how can I honor that and bring that through so I can feel my best, so I can calm my nervous system as a busy day? And sometimes we do need to decompress by scrolling or watching, but then I always encourage people to have a buffer where then they have a little bit of time where they really get to like have no more input from their environment. Like, and that could, again, be sitting on the couch. One of the things I do every night, my husband and I have a hot tub and we sit and we chat. And that is just so nice because we're not like sitting next to each other in another world.
I love that. And I think, you know, people are at different places in their life, right? In terms of like, they may not have a career they love. They may not be in a relationship. They may not be able to set up that more ideal scenario. It can be totally something that I really support people in living into their visions and knowing that whatever your ideal is, you can create it, but not thinking that you have to have all that before you can sleep. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, oftentimes there is something going on a deeper level that even those external things may not be able to switch and fix. And, you know, I know that was so true for me. I was doing everything right. And like just nothing, you know, nothing was shifting for me. And I was really, really, really struggling. And it wasn't until like I had a trip that was a reset. My family came, Athena and my husband came with me. And I was by the ocean and my body got like a bit of a nervous system reset that really shifted. But I still have nights. Like I didn't sleep well last night for no reasons. Did everything right. Nothing different. Well, I guess the only reason is there was a very powerful full moon. So we still have like, and my daughter can be sensitive to it too, but there, you know, still can be reasons that we just, you know, don't sleep. And so one thing that's really been helpful for me is because I think that when we've been sleep deprived or had trouble with sleep, and then we do start sleeping again, there's the fear of going back, and we can have one bad night of sleep and go, oh crap, or two bad nights and just like, and feel how awful that feels after a few nights of actually getting some good sleep and have like a lot of, you know, concern or fear come up. I've gotten to the place where I'm just like, okay, going to shift to a lower gear today because I didn't sleep super great. I got like 56 minutes of deep sleep. Not good. But for people that may like have that night or feel like that setback, what are some things that you would say that can help them not go into like a doomsday of, oh my God, like my sleep is permanently broken. I feel like I take 5 steps forward and 4 steps back. I mean, does it take a while for our nervous system and our body and everything to really come into some consistency?
It takes so much time. Mm. Yeah. I just think in the society and the ways that we live and operate, it would be maybe a different conversation we could have if we could say like, okay, if you weren't sleeping well, and then all of your stress was gone and it would be gone forever for the rest of your life, then there's a very good chance you would sleep well. But there's like always shifts and changes happening in our environment, some of which we have control over, some of which we don't, to your point, like things like the lunar cycles and weather patterns and what happens in our lives. And so staying really connected to those rhythms that work for you. And one of the tendencies that people can have on a simple level is if you've had a bad night's sleep, then to sleep in, right? Because maybe like finally get back to sleep at, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. after lying awake from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. And then you want to sleep in to kind of cash in on the sleep that you missed out on. If that happens once, it's not a big deal. But when we're always changing our wake up time, and when our wake up time is really inconsistent, and we have trouble sleeping at night, then that's one of the first ways that we can bring consistency, because you have control over your wake up time. We don't always have as much control over when we fall asleep. And that's a really great starting point for people, where it's like, if you pick and stick to a consistent wake up time, as hard as it can be and as challenging as it can be, depending on how well you've slept, right? Then it does help create more consistency and build something called sleep pressure over the following day and days to make it more easy for you to fall asleep and stay asleep in the subsequent days. That, and going back to the light dark exposure, that has such a profound impact on our nervous system and circadian rhythm. And so using light therapy, of course, natural sunlight is the best, but up here in Canada, we don't have access to morning sunlight when most of us are waking up in the morning and in the winter hours. So there's lots of evidence for using light therapy devices to help establish your circadian rhythm, to help make that wake up time easier, to help you feel more energized and happier. There's lots of studies on depression and anxiety, and that aren't, I should mention and highlight, like that isn't necessarily related to that seasonal annual depression. So said a different way, light therapy can help with mood, even if you don't suffer from seasonal annual depression. And it can really help with our ability to fall asleep and stay asleep and have more consolidated sleep. The one other thing I would add in there too, is using something like yoga nidra. And I wanted to add that in when you were asking previously about moms too, or people who, like, if you've had a bad night's sleep and are trying to do your best in the day, like what are some of the resources that you can rely on? So if you're not familiar with it, yoga nidra translates to sleepy yoga. And typically it's about a 20 minute, you can find lots of guided meditations on your favorite mindfulness app or YouTube. And it walks you through a very deep form of relaxation. The goal is to not fall asleep. That's not the intention with this form of a yoga practice, but it helps you get into such a deep state of relaxation that the benefits are similar to as if you had had a full sleep cycle in terms of how you feel and the impact it can have on your mood without it then disrupting your nighttime sleep. So that could be an option for people as well. And then also going back to that kindness and compassion piece and building that out to realize, like, we're all human and we're all having a human experience. And that will mean that we don't sleep perfectly every night. Sometimes it is a little bit more obvious, or with more learning and opportunity, we might have the wherewithal and increased awareness to be like, I didn't sleep well and I know why. Like, now I know if I have caffeine after this point. Now I know if I have alcohol. Now I know if I have a stimulating conversation, or now I know if I go out in the evening. Like, you just will find so many patterns when you become just, again, more aware. The goal isn't to be obsessed or too rigid about these things, but more aware of how our daily patterns, interactions, and then really where I like to bring it into is like your intuition and what is your body asking for and trying to tell you if it is waking you up at night. Is there something trying to come through that is asking and vying for your attention, because we may not be making space for it or acknowledging it in the day?
That's so good. Well, let's talk about the other factor that may be keeping a lot of women up at night, which is hormonal changes. So then there's just the normal cycle changes. I noticed the week before my period, it is a lot harder for me to sleep. It's harder for me to like get more deep sleep. And then I also want to talk about perimenopause, because I know a lot of my listeners are in that bucket, and you could be having like no quote unquote symptoms, but still be in like a hormonal trajectory that's just shifting and changing that makes sleep hard. And again, as another aside, I get so frustrated. I'm like, why do women have so many struggles sometimes? I mean, I know that's another narrative that we can buy, you know, buy into or not, but the reality of being a woman and all the hormonal changes we go through just monthly, pregnancy and postpartum, and then during perimenopause and menopause. I mean, it's a ride. It's definitely a ride, a hormonal ride to be a woman. So I'd love to just bring some context and some information to sleep at different stages in our cycle, what to expect, what's really important so we can get good sleep throughout our cycle, and what can, like, what defines whether we're in perimenopause or not, and what can start to happen during that stage of our life.
Okay. Great aspect of conversation to highlight as it relates to sleep. So what you could start with tracking, what I would say is across your monthly menstrual cycle, if you're still menstruating. And like you said, in that 1 week, often women will start to notice even in the 3 to 4 days preceding their menstrual cycle or bleed, that sleep becomes more challenging. And at that part in our cycle is when progesterone and estrogen are decreasing. So they're withdrawing from being at a nice high level. There's no specific level that you reach. Like there's no hormone test that we could do that be like, oh, it's when your hormones are at this point, you have trouble sleeping. It's related to the fact that you had the hormones And then now they're decreasing. So you're experiencing essentially like a withdrawal. And that withdrawal, depending on where you're at in your age and stage of life, it may be more pronounced. So certainly as women start to move through their 30s, closer to their 40s and into their 40s, and then getting into perimenopause, and I can define that for us, then those changes start to become more noticeable. And something I often hear women in my practice say is like, oh, for some reason, every once in a while, I have two or three nights where I just can't sleep. And I'll say, like, it's probably related to your cycle. It's when you're premenstrual. And they're like, ah, I don't know. I'm like, okay, let's track it over a couple of cycles and see what happens. And sure enough, they come back and they're like, you're magic. How did you know? This is exactly. And it's from that predictable pattern. Now, that pattern can become less predictable as we move through perimenopause. And perimenopause, by definition, is what we call a clinical diagnosis, meaning there's no way that we can objectively assess it and like look at it on a test and be like, yes, you are in perimenopause. It's a culmination of different symptoms and ruling out other causes of those things. Sleep is one of the hallmark symptoms, sleep changes, and sleep changes can start to occur. Mood changes, energy changes can start to occur in perimenopause when you are perimenopausal before your cycle changes. But often women and practitioners may not think to relate those changes, or may not think about like, is this person, am I in perimenopause, if their cycle is still regular. Your body engages so many compensatory mechanisms to keep your menstrual cycle regular. It works very hard to do that. So while all of these other things are shifting beneath the scenes, and perhaps because so many of your resources are being put into keeping your cycle regular, these other things then start to show up, right? The mood, energy, and sleep changes. And I would also add to that, like temperature changes. So if you start to notice that you are warmer in that part of your cycle leading up to your period, if you have night sweats or just feel warmer at night, feel like you have to toss the covers off, this can be really subtle. But when you start to become more aware, you'll probably realize that it is happening. And as our cycles get less and less regular and more and really less predictable as we go through perimenopause, this first kind of starting sign of that your period is coming, whether it's coming earlier or later than it typically does or used to, maybe that sleep disruption and temperature changes. And again, because our hormones are dropping and going so low at that point in our cycle. And then sure enough, typically by about day three, so after 3 days of that bleed, that's when estrogen starts to pick back up. And for me, that is something that I notice in the same pattern as you, Christine, in terms of couple nights before, sleep isn't quite as deep. It's not quite as easy. Maybe there's a little bit more restlessness. I certainly notice some temperature changes. And then sure enough, by day three, I'm like, oh, it's back. Here we go. So we do have to ride that wave. And I think it highlights that we have these beautiful inherent cycles as women. And if you identify as a woman and lean into that cyclical nature, and from a conventional standpoint and often a societal standpoint, we're taught and have an expectation of ourselves that we have to feel and function the same way every day. Actually, we have to like function better than we did yesterday, right? Be more productive, accomplish more, all the things. And in each phase of our cycle, we really do need something different. When we have higher levels of estrogen in our follicular phase, as we're approaching ovulation, like it's easier for us to feel outgoing and productive and on our A game and even work out. And then as those hormones are lowering and we're moving through that luteal phase, premenstrual phase, like we have an inherent desire to go more inward, to withdraw, to be less social, to check in with what we need. And like there's so much wisdom in that cycle that we're disconnected from. And I really love bringing women back into that. And I find when women do connect with that, they're like, how did I not know about this? Yeah. I wish I knew this so much earlier. And then of course we can look at that, like the extension of perimenopause and menopause is almost like that prolonged luteal phase where symptoms start to become more pronounced. Technically, you're in perimenopause. Like it is easier to define when your menstrual cycle has changed by 7 days in either direction. So let's say if you were a textbook 28-day cycle and now your cycle is coming every 21 days, or every 35 days, then you would be considered to be in perimenopause.
And what are the things we can do to help ourselves when we start getting into perimenopause?
Mm-hmm. I wish I could, like, I'm moving my hands so much right now because I'm such a visual person. So we'll basically see like a huge sawtooth pattern, if you can picture this as you're listening. And it's going, your hormones are going up and down, but overall they're also going down, if that makes sense. So it's like an up and down, but an overall slope mm-hmm. downwards. Mm-hmm. As we, again, progress through perimenopause. And really what's happening there is our ovulation, so releasing and producing that egg, is less frequent because we're reaching a point in our life in which all of the eggs that we're born with are spent or aren't as good of a quality. And so they're not producing the same level of hormones. And we won't get too technical about it, but that's why cycles start to become less predictable, less regular. Typically what starts to happen is cycles first start coming closer together and then they'll move further apart. And once you've gone one full year without a menstrual cycle, you're in menopause. And so as those hormones are going up and down, but overall going down, what I like to say and explain to patients and people who I work with is, let's create a through line for you. So while your own hormones are going up and down, what can we do to create that level of steadiness for you so that you can respond to and not feel like you're having to react to what your hormones are doing? Because your hormones aren't the problem, really. Like, we like to blame them, but again, it comes back to this idea of they really impact how we feel and function. So what do we need to do with that? Sure, we can absolutely use something like hormone therapy to create the through line. For many women in perimenopause, progesterone can be very helpful to start because they're still producing estrogen, and that progesterone production is the first thing that can sometimes be less abundant, less reliable, less predictable as ovulation changes. And oral progesterone helps with sleep. It's very calming based on how it works in the brain, and it induces natural sleep compared to some sedative medications. So for a lot of women, that can be a starting point to consider talking with their healthcare provider about in order to support them from a hormonal standpoint. And then if indicated and safe, estrogen can be introduced in perimenopause or in menopause. What we see in the literature is, like, women who have sleep disturbances through perimenopause and menopause most often have it because of those temperature fluctuations, because of hot flashes and night sweats. And, like, that's the primary reason why they're waking up, their sleep is disturbed. And then, of course, you know, once they're awake, maybe your mind starts racing because it's also a very alive time in your life. You've got kids who are getting older. You have parents perhaps who are getting older. You're navigating the peak of your career often. So there's, like, so much that's also happening in this time for women to have on their mind and be dealing with. And so that's also where we need to bring in, okay, what are we doing to nourish you and help you manage your stress and help you be responsive to what's going on in your life and to be able to manage that. And I'm such, you know, I know we all, like, often want to gravitate towards, like, something new and fancy or trendy, but I'm like, let's make sure the basics are covered. Like, what are you doing in the day to help yourself feel calm and collected and checking in with yourself? How are you unwinding at the end of the day? How are you fueling your body? How are you moving your body? What connections, like, how are you in your relationships and community? Because so often, you know, that even something as simple as, like, that desire to scroll at the end of the day might be because you desire connection, and that's how you feel like you're getting it, which is a great thing to recognize. And it can be a way to get it, but perhaps there's, like, a deeper desire for a more meaningful connection that's there. And we see when we bring in things like that, when people are connected on a psycho-emotional level, when people are connected in community, when people are connected to their sense of purpose, and when we help people build resiliency, their sleep improves, their heart rate variability improves. Like, it's shifting things on a physiological deep level for people. Mm. And I think that's such a powerful way. And there's even a specific study called Psychological Resilience in Perimenopause. And it demonstrates that women who are more resilient, and there's a variety of factors that they assessed, but they will have less physical, mental, and emotional symptoms as they navigate perimenopause and menopause compared to women who score lower on a resiliency scale. So even though we're all experiencing the same hormonal changes and fluctuations, we will experience that very differently, depending on how well we're able to integrate and respond to that in our life.
Mm. I want to talk to you about the shame of perimenopause and menopause, but especially perimenopause. I've had many friends that I've talked to in their sleep or this and skin and mom. And I'm like, well, you know, you could be in perimenopause. No. My cycles are still regular. Like there's such like a denial mm-hmm. about this phase in life. And I think it's a bigger conversation around how women tend to be devalued as they age versus really respected. And there's not like, there's so much celebration about getting pregnant. Oh my God, you're having a baby. But like perimenopause and menopause, it's like, okay, well, you're an old lady now. There's not the celebration that's mm-hmm. there as this incredibly significant rite of passage. And so I would just love you to speak to shame women might feel, or even women that may be in that late 30s to early 40s and think that that means that their chances of having a baby are gone. You know, that's one thing I talk a lot about with my audience is, you know, I had a baby in my 40s and it's definitely possible. And it's possible because of, you know, how I took care of myself and in my life, both on a health physical level, but also on a mental, emotional, spiritual level. But I'd love you to speak to one, that the shame and the denial we can have about going into that part of our life, which may prevent us from actually getting support. And then the fear that may come up for women in their later 30s, early 40s, who may still really want a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a beautiful conversation to have, because we can bring in that shame, I think, partly because we often dismiss, like women are so often dismissed in their experience, especially if their cycles are still regular and they're noticing changes to these other aspects of their life. And so there might be one in an initial denial, or even if there's a questioning on the part of the woman, I think that shame and denial often comes from realizing there's a part of us that we're now losing and a part of us that we're leaving behind. And as one of my favorite clients says, like life is a series of deaths and like deaths of previous versions of ourselves and iterations of ourselves that ultimately really allows us to evolve and stand in a higher version. And so as we transition through perimenopause, there's a very real way that we're faced with perhaps looking at the loss of our youthfulness, perhaps the loss of that reproductive age, or at least the prime or average age of that. And for some women may even mean bringing in bigger questions and realizing their mortality in some ways, I think. And then the shame can get layered on top of that when we bring concerns to a medical provider or team member, and they're dismissed or denied as like, oh, that can't be your hormones, or even if it is acknowledged, it's like, oh, that's just a part of that. So you're going to have to figure it out kind of thing. Here's an antidepressant, or here's an anti-anxiety medication, when that's not at the root of the problem. Of course, those things might help and we can use them as bridging strategies. But I feel like that's a lot of where that shame may come from. Is that what you mm-hmm. see?
I see it in many levels. I mean, the biggest place I see it is this collective narrative that women become less attractive and less valuable in society, you know, as they get older. You know, like it's not, you don't see people having menopause showers
right.
or parties, or I mean, I'm sure some people are doing it, but it's not a thing. And mm-hmm. so it feels like something you really go through alone as a woman. And I think there's still pressure on women to feel young, to feel desirable. Like, again, we're working through a lot of the collective narrative that's there. And I think just, yeah, realizing we don't like, you know, the way I worked out 10 years ago, and the way I exercise now are completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different. But the things that matter to me are completely different too. And that's been the part about aging that has been really helpful for me, is like really accepting the stage of life I'm in instead of like wanting to get back something. Because mm-hmm. also with aging and this stage in life, being in my 40s, like the things that matter to me and don't matter to me are such a relief. Mm-hmm. You know, things that just used to really cause me a lot of stress and worry and concern don't anymore. So I think it's important for women to like accept and celebrate the stage of life they're in and not look at it like a diagnosis, but really look at it like, okay, things are changing. What could I do to get support around it? And not come at it from this place of, oh, I'm in perimenopause, like everything's drying up, like mm-hmm. versus, you know, really just accepting it, celebrating it. Cause in that space, I think we're way more likely to attract and receive the help and be open to the help that could really support us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so much of a positive way to look at it. What I see women describe is like an unveiling, like, and that sounds like what you're saying in terms of what is now important to you and what you're willing to perhaps tolerate and what you also want to stand up for and accomplish. And I think that is the beautiful piece of like really blooming into who you really are as your truest, most beautiful self in this part of your life. And my other friend likes to call it, you know, your second act. Like this is such an incredible opportunity to really step into who you are and what matters for you, and bring all of that life experience with you while also recognizing if and where and when you need support. And in my experience, so many women come to me at that point because they also have a realization of, wow, I've taken care of everyone and everything else for so long. And now it's time to focus on me.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's where some of the shame comes in too, because there are changes that do occur to your hormones and to your body that aren't under your control. And the things that you did when you were 25 aren't going to have the same impact. And so how can we build that resiliency for you and that self-kindness and compassion to be able to love yourself, still have such a deep sense of self-worth and self-value that's intrinsically validated, versus it having to be externally validated or gratified.
Right. Right. Well, I know this is something that you help women with on many different levels. And it's so nice to have a doctor and someone who has the medical training and the experience, and as a woman, really come in and teach people how to sleep like a queen, in your words, because we all really deserve that. And it makes a huge difference. And we may go through seasons in our life where we're not sleeping, and that might be, you know, the way that our body, our subconscious mind, our higher self is working to get our attention to address some things that we may have not been addressing or addressing in the way they need to be addressed. And I love that when you work with people on sleep, you don't just tell them to reduce screen time and go to bed earlier. There's a whole process where you're really looking at holistically what's happening in people's lives. So could you share a little bit more about the program that you have to support people to really start sleeping like a queen?
Mm-hmm. I'd be honored to. So there's a couple of options for people who would like to take this work further. And one is called the Better Sleep Bootcamp. And that is a self-paced course that will walk you through the 5 steps that are based in hormonal changes. Like we talked about, supporting your nervous system, your blood sugar regulation, as well as your female hormone cycles, to understand how all of this interrelates and what you have control over and what you can impact and influence to fix your broken sleep. I really find value in working with people on that deeper level. And so if you're like, I've tried all the things, I'm taking the boxes, I'm taking such good care of myself, I know all the tips and tricks, I really want to get to that deeper level and understand what my body is trying to tell me, how to navigate this new stage of life, and those deeper reasons why you're not sleeping, then there's an opportunity for us to connect one-on-one. And all of that will be linked up in the show notes for people.
We'll give you the link right now, everybody. So it's the sleepfix.com/Christine. And Leah, we're also giving people a coupon code. Yes.
Yeah. We're giving people a coupon code for $100 off the Better Sleep Bootcamp. And I've put together a special offer for Over and On With It listeners who apply for one-on-one coaching.
Awesome. And what's that coupon code?
The coupon code is auto-applied.
Oh, great. Oh, that's so easy. One less thing to remember.
See, one less thing to remember so you can sleep better at night.
Amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for, you know, using all this brain power that you have from getting good sleep to help the people that may not be. And I can't emphasize enough, you know, I think that a lot of you listeners might be looking for like, what's the, you know, I don't know, looking for an answer on how you can fix like a health concern or an anxiety concern. And so like, there's so much healing and restoration that goes on in sleep. And so I highly encourage you, like, look at really optimizing your sleep as a place to start, because so many other things in your life might just get better because you're sleeping well. So it's thesleepfix.com/Christine. Opportunities to go through a self-paced program or work with Dr. Leah individually, which would be such a treat. Anything else you want to share as we wrap up?
I'm just absolutely honored and delighted to be here. So thank you, Christine.
Oh, it's my pleasure.